What do you think about what others think about you? What do you think about yourself? I'm reminded of the story of the lady that walks into the doctor's office and they do all of those vital signs and measurements and etc. And so the nurse looks over at the lady and she says, "Ma'am, what do you weigh?" She says, 115 pounds. She said, "If you will, just step on the scales." And the nurse just kind of says under her breath, 140. Then she said, "Ma'am, how tall are you?" And the lady said, "I'm 5'9". She said, "Okay, if you don't mind, just back up against the wall there." She said, 5'5". She said, "Ma'am, your blood pressure, is it normal, low, or high?" She said, "Oh, it's normal." She said, "Well, let's take your blood pressure." She took it, and she said, it's high." And the woman spouted out, "Well, I guess it is high. If you walked in here thinking you were tall and slender and somebody just told you you were short and fat, you'd probably have high blood pressure too." Listen, tonight, as we said last night, we're not considering these to think about how could I live my life so that everybody would think I'm a perfect person. What could I do to gain the favor of everyone? By no means are we suggesting that life ought to be a popularity contest, that I ought to seek to please everyone I meet. It's not that by any stretch of the imagination. But it is the fact that whenever we become a child of God, that there are things about us having that transformation in our life that we ought to be more like God. God is a blessing to those in which He's in contact. God's Son came to this earth, and even though not everyone loved Him or even liked Him, He offered blessings to everyone that He was around. That's what we're studying last night and tonight. Ultimately, it's what is it that God would form me into? I'm a piece of clay. If I really allowed Him to put His hands around my life and mold me, how would He make me in such a way that I would interact with others? If instead of it was just me interacting, what if it was God and me interacting? What would it look like? I love the passage. It's not exactly about just interacting with each other, but it reminds us of a powerful principle. Acts the 3rd chapter, Peter and John had healed the crippled man. It gained such attention, and Peter said, "It wasn't us that did it, it was the power of God." And then in the power of Jesus Christ, and he spoke about the resurrection, and then the book of Acts, that's what fired people up against Christianity. There were those that did not want to believe in the resurrected Christ. And so now they arrest him. They take him before the Sanhedrin council. They want to put an end to the preaching of Jesus Christ. And then jumping right to verse 13 of Acts, the 4th chapter, while they're being interviewed by the Sanhedrin council, notice what the observation is of the council. "Now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John and perceived that they were uneducated and untrained men, they marveled, and they realized that they had been with Jesus." Isn't that interesting? You know, just listening to these guys, they've not been to school with our rabbis. They are not even educated. But look how they espouse a doctrine with such power. Look at the boldness as they proclaim, and it was truth they were proclaiming. You know who they remind us of? You can tell these men have been with Jesus. Would anybody tomorrow, when you go to work, to school, out in your community, would anyone say, "You can tell that person right there has been around Jesus"? That's how we want to influence others. It's not so we can be perceived as a popular person or even as a well-liked person, but it is so that Jesus would be seen in us. The book of Proverbs, a wonderful book to tell us a lot about wisdom. What would that look like lived out in our life? Here are 30 things that if we could bring into our lives, these are things that people would appreciate because there's virtues and characteristics that's far higher than man's wisdom. This wisdom is from God. So 31 reasons people like you. We'll do like we did last night. We'll go through a few of these at a little bit slower pace, and we'll give a list at the end, and then you can have a handout. Number one, when those in authority think you are wise. Proverbs 18:35 says, "The king's favor is toward a wise servant, but his wrath is against him who causes shame. Are you a type of person that respects authority, honors authority, and obeys authority? Any of you that are supervisors at work, or you are an employer and you have employees working under you, you know how wonderful it is to have workers that appreciate your place and their place in the organization. Anytime in government, we have individuals that understand their place as citizens and leaders understand their place as leaders, we usually could consider that a very good place to live. That's a peaceful place to live. I don't know of any of us that would choose to live where there's a coup taking place. You see, there is a beautiful peacefulness that we admire whenever we see people that respect authority. The king's going to look at a servant that respects his authority and say, that's one of my best servants that I have. Number two, when you are a dependable messenger. We see this several times throughout the book of Proverbs. We saw another verse last night similar to this. Proverbs 12 and verse 13. Like the cold of snow in times of harvest is a faithful messenger to those who send him. For he refreshes the soul of his master. Now, when we think about how important it is to be able to depend on someone when we need them. You send a messenger with a message. And then at the time that message needs to be delivered, you find out, oh, the messenger, he decided not to take that message. He said it was too difficult. He got sidetracked with other things. And it makes ways difficult. It hurts relationships. And so it is when we think about, why do people like certain characteristics of others, and what would one of those characteristics be? They like individuals that they can depend upon. If a friend asks you to do something, can they depend upon you? They like that. Number three, when you are reverent. Proverbs 28 and 14. Happy is the man who is always reverent, but he who hardens his heart will fall into calamity. Now, I'm not so sure that everybody out in the world will like a reverent person, but yet there is an attractiveness, perhaps to everyone, of reverence, but definitely of the children of God. How do you speak God's name? Don't use God's name in vain. Be reverent towards God. How do you study His Word? How do you apply His Word? Do you see it truly as the Word of God, and you approach His Word with reverence? How do you view worship? Do you realize that in worship is a time that you're pouring out your adoration to God, and so you do so in reverence? There is a reverence that is attractive, and there is irreverence that's not attractive. People like to see that attractiveness of reverence. Number four, when you excel at your work, Proverbs 22 and 29, do you see a man who excels in his work? He will stand before kings. He'll not stand before unknown men. Isn't it amazing how much today we underestimate hard workers? What does a person have to do to really succeed at his work? I'm not suggesting that this is everything, but isn't it amazing when someone just shows up 15 minutes early to work every day? And then they do everything that's asked of them and a little extra. And they generally stay just a few minutes after the time that they're expected. And you know what most employers or most supervisors say about an individual that simply does those things right there? They'll often say, that's one of the best workers I have. It's hard to appreciate a lazy person. It just is. You want to be a person that people appreciate, be a hard worker. Well, that means I'll have to work hard. It does, doesn't it? Just get up every day and work hard. And someone says, oh, it can't be that easy. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's amazing how many times the book of Proverbs praises and lifts up an individual that works hard. Now, take it a step further. It's amazing how many times people around us lift up the person that works hard also. There's something very attractive about the person that works hard. There's just not many people that's willing to do it day in and day out in many situations. Number five, when you encourage a depressed person, this would be a reason that people like you. Proverbs 12 and 25, anxiety in the heart of man causes depression, but a good word makes it glad. Now notice, that good word is not a word to try to make someone forget their depression or forget their anxiety. That good word is an encouraging word to someone who is hurting. I mentioned to you last night how important it is for us to acknowledge someone's pain. We do not comfort individuals by acting like they're not hurting. Oh, I'm just going to try to change the subject and maybe I can get them to laugh. That's not of a comfort. That's inconsiderate. Well, what is comforting? When someone can come and share words that shares in the sorrow and shares words of encouragement in the sorrow. We don't share words that can take the pain away. You and I do not have that ability. We go to someone who's lost a loved one. We don't have any words that can perform a resurrection. So we're not there to take the pain away. We're there to walk with them during their pain. I think about a story that, well, it's not a story. I think about something that happened just about a year ago at the Mount Juliet congregation. 4 weeks into the row, the congregation was given a homework assignment. And one particular week, every bench had pieces of stationery on it. And everybody that week was asked to leave here, pray about it, and then figure out who is it that you're going to write a note to that has been a great encouragement to you throughout your life. And you just want to write a letter to say thank you for being that spiritual encouragement. One of our guys that is well into his 60s, he went home and he gave some careful consideration. Who is it that I should write this note to? And he thought about a teacher that did a wonderful job when he was a young man, when this man that was considering who would write, his name is Ben. When Ben was deciding who he would write, he thought about a teacher that he had in Bible class when Ben was a very young man. But this man always had a way of not only teaching the truth, but showing deep love for the students. And he said, even once I left home, that man's relationship with God and with God's children continually encouraged me. So he said, I looked him up and I got his address and I wrote him a note just to tell him, even though that many decades have passed, the encouragement that he had been. This man, of course, by this time is a very elderly man. His wife for many years has had Alzheimer's. He, in his elderly state, is caring for his wife for several years at home. He receives Ben's letter. A few days later, Ben receives in the mail this short note from this man's daughter. And this man's daughter says, Hello, Ben. I'm not sure what the contents were in the letter you wrote to my dad, but you sure lifted his spirits, and the timing was almost divine. I called him this evening to check on he and Mama. He's not felt physically well for a few days, and earlier last week, he had encountered a couple of issues that just left him in not a good humor, as he described it to me. I believe in part he's struggling with the limitations aging and caregiving has created. Anyway, he shared with me that he had received a complimentary letter from you that seemed to restore some joy he was missing. Notice that. What did those words do? Restored joy that he was missing. Thank you. Thank you for allowing God to use you to brighten this day and days ahead for my dad. God bless you and keep you in His grace. Now what did that verse say there again? Proverbs 12 and 25, anxiety in the heart of man causes depression, but a good word makes it glad. Here was a man that was having some difficult weeks, and one good word from a person he had not seen in decades brought him joy. Isn't it amazing how the Bible is true every time? Every time it's true. Number six, people are going to like you when you carefully consider how to respond. Proverbs 15 and 28. The heart of the righteous studies how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours forth evil. How many times have you talked with someone that it's obvious that they never thought about anything they said until after they said it? How many times have you been guilty of saying something and as you heard it roll off your tongue, you thought, I wish I could retrieve that. I wish I could have a do-over right now. What about if instead we say, you know, I want to grow and I want to mature. And one of the things I want to do is I want to carefully evaluate what I say before I ever say it. The proverb reads it very clear. If we are going to study, that's deep. Study how we're going to answer before we ever answer. When's the last time you've said to someone, you know, I'd like for you to give me a little time to think about that before I answer you. Is this afternoon okay? How about if I call you tomorrow morning? Listen, I'm not trying to make up rules and become a Pharisee here. I'm just giving you by application this thought. If you can't remember the last time you've said to someone, I want to think about that before I answer you, you need to give some thought. You've probably spoken several times when you should have taken time to think before you've ever spoken. Number seven, when you keep private matters private. This is in Proverbs so many times. Last night we saw another verse. Here's a similar one like it. Proverbs 17 and 9. People are going to like it if we can do this. He who covers a transgression seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates friends. When we see something that is wrong, what is our responsibility from God? Our responsibility is to go to that person one-on-one and address it. There is no reason for us to turn around and go to someone else and talk about the transgression. It's not our place to punish people. It's not our place to seek vengeance against people. It's our place to go and try to help them. And then, it's not our place to repeat matters. Now, I know it is our place from there in Matthew 18 to go and talk to one other or two others and get them to go back with us to talk with them again. But please notice the principle that's the second part of this verse. You do not have a friendship that is stronger than continual gossip. I'll state it again. You do not have a friendship that is stronger than continual gossip. Gossip is deadly. It will separate, depending on what translation you're reading, the chiefest of friends. We continue with number eight. When you have a good reputation, many of us have heard this verse many times. I hope we live it and appreciate it. Proverbs 22 and 1, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold. What is your reputation worth? What is that good name worth? And I'm not saying how could you convince somebody to believe something about you that you're not. That's not what this verse is talking about. This verse is talking about a reputation that you've developed because you've lived a righteous life. You've lived a compassionate, loving life. And because of that, there is a reputation that comes along with that. Right now, if you had the choice to take $10 million or the opportunity of a good name, and with the $10 million, you had to sacrifice your good name, which one would you take? The proverb written by the wealthiest man of his day is saying to his son, son, don't ever sell out your reputation. I think about the man that was trying to hire an accountant for his firm. And he said to him, he said, would you ever like change numbers to kind of help an organization out? He said, oh, no, sir. I'm a CPA of integrity. I said, okay. The owner of the firm kind of shifted around a little bit in his seat. He said, let's rephrase that. Let's say that you only had to shift a few numbers around and there could be a $10,000 bonus. You know what I mean? Would you then change any numbers? And the guy that was being interviewed for the CPA said, well, you know, if it's just a few numbers, with a $10,000 bonus coming to the CPA, I think we could probably work out something there. And the guy kind of smiles a little bit. He says, okay. He said, what about if it's just a few numbers and there's a $1,000 bonus? CPA kind of looked. He said, well, if it's not significant, the numbers, we could shift those around for a $1,000 bonus. Guy nods. He said, okay. He said, one more question along these lines. Could we shift around some numbers for, let's say, a $10 bonus? Well, the guy being interviewed was offended. He said, what do you think I am? $10 to change numbers around? And the guy said, fella, whoa, I already know what you are. I'm just trying to figure out how much it costs to get you. What's your reputation worth? Would you ever, on April 15th, sell out your honesty for just a few $100 on a tax form? What's your reputation worth? Most importantly, what's your reputation to God? God knows us better than we know ourselves. If God were going to look down right now and say, let me tell you about that person right there, and he points to you, how's our reputation going to sound as God describes who we really are? Number nine, 31 reasons people like you. Number nine, when you make learning fun. Proverbs 16 and 21, the wise in heart will be called prudent. And notice this last part. Sweetness of the lips increases learning. Isn't it interesting that we could go around the room right now, this isn't an appropriate setting, but if it was an appropriate setting, we could go around the room right now and we could say to every one of you, tell us your favorite teacher. And what's interesting is that for some of us, it would be decades back, but yet we remember the teacher's name, we remember characteristics about them. And what's interesting, if we said, okay, now that's your favorite teacher, tell us why it's your favorite teacher. And you know, everyone, almost everyone, would say things they enjoyed about the style of teaching. They would say things they enjoyed about the teacher. Isn't that interesting? Everybody seems to learn more when they are in an environment that they enjoy learning. You walk down the hallway of church during Bible class, and I don't know why you'd do that. You shouldn't be in Bible class. But if you did walk down the hallway during Bible class and you heard a roll of laughter in a room, what's your first thought? When I was a young man, I thought, they ought to get more serious and study the Bible. Now, after I've been in classes where there was never a chirp of laughter, and I've been in other classes where laughter is frequent, it's real clear which ones they learn the most. 9 out of 10 times, they're going to learn the most wherever there is joy in learning. Now, you don't have to believe me because I say that. That's what God said. God says when there's sweetness of the lips, when there's the pleasantries, when it's wonderful, that doesn't take away from truth. It makes it lively. It makes it pleasant. I think about one of your own. We have 12 adult classes on Sunday morning. Mitch Poskovich, you raised him up right. He's one of the best adult teachers we have. He packed his room so much, we had to take a wall out. Now his room holds about 90. We had to go in there about 3 weeks ago and say, look, we're not going to split your class, but we need some of you to leave because your class grows better than any other class. They're great about getting newcomers that visit to come up to their class. And if they ever start coming up to the class, it won't be long before they'll be baptized. Mitch baptized one last night while we were here. He baptized one that's been in his class. And so You know, we've got to make seats in his classroom because there's a lot of conversions that come out of his classroom. But you know what else is in his classroom? Often. Lots of laughter. And people come out of that class and they'll say, I learned more Bible in his classes than any class I've ever been in. Listen, if you're a school teacher and your idea is you want to make the kids miserable, you have just had a conflict with good education. If you're a Bible class teacher and your idea is we're going to keep everything 100% serious, you've missed the very teaching that God's given. Laughter is medicine for the soul. We as Christians ought to be the happiest people on earth. Not just when we're outside of studying the Bible. Think how silly that would be. You ought to be the happiest people on earth unless you're going to study the Word of God. No. Fortunately, it's a lot different than that to God, and it ought to be to us. Number 10, when you say the right words at the right time. What a powerful passage here. Proverbs 15 and 23. A man has joy by the answers of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good it is. How can we know what the word is that ought to be spoken at a particular time? We touched on this some last night from a little bit different angle. The first thing we have to be able to do to be able to speak the appropriate word in due season, in other words, it's in the proper time, we have to first be a good listener. What's going on in the person's life around you? If you have children, do you spend all your time talking to them or do you spend time listening to them? If you spend time listening to understand them, then you can say the good words in due time. It's interesting to me that I think we as parents a lot of time have a problem with listening to understand our children. And I was in Latin America in El Salvador back about 5 or 6 years ago, and I was in front of a public school and had a translator, of course, and I said to them, I said, how many of you, I was just curious if it was the same on both North America and Central America. I said, how many of you, teenage high schoolers in class, I said, how many of you feel like your parents understand you? They immediately, as that was translated, they began to shake their head. And I said, do you guys feel like your parents listen to you? Immediately, strong response, no. Why? Why is it that it's so hard for us to listen, to understand where someone is? Spouses. One of the frequent things said in counseling, I can say something and they won't listen to anything I say. Why is it so hard? Employers will oftentimes say, I could tell my employees something and they would never listen to what I say. Why is it it's so hard for us to listen? But notice, not only is that detrimental, but the huge reason that that's detrimental is then when we don't listen to where someone is, it's impossible then for us to meet them where they are. If we can meet them where they are, we can have the appropriate words to say, but if we can't meet them where they are, we can't. Now, if time was endless, we could spend a lot of time talking about how important this is to evangelism. If you can meet people where they are, you know then how to tell them about Jesus. But if your idea is, I'm just going to walk up and I'm going to start telling somebody about Jesus, you might need to take the time to figure out who you're talking with so that you know where to start. Number 11, when you try to help your friends, be better people. Proverbs 27 and 17, beautiful passage on friendship. As iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of a friend. If someone is going to befriend you, are they going to be a better person because they befriend you? People like friends that help them become better people. Number 12, when you live morally excellent, selfless lives. Here we have a description of the virtuous woman. Now this principle could be true beyond a woman, but notice what it said about her. Proverbs 31 and 10, who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. What impact is she going to have? Drop down to verse 28. Her children rise up and call her blessed, and her husband also, he praises her. Virtuous woman is a woman who lives a morally excellent life. There's something attractive about someone who can discipline their life. in moral virtues. People appreciate that. They're drawn to that. Even immoral people are often drawn to the very concept that someone could live such a disciplined life. But in this setting, what is so beautiful is that this woman has children that rise up and they praise her. This woman has a husband that lifts her up and he praises her. 13, when you care enough to correct. Proverbs 9 and 8, do not correct a scoffer, lest he hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. If you have good friends, are you a good enough friend to correct them? Now, remember, Jesus taught that we do need to take the cross tie out of our own eye before we try to remove the speck of sawdust that is in our friend's eye. But notice, he wasn't condemning by any stretch of the imagination the idea of not helping our friend. He was saying, let's make sure that we are what we need to be, so in fact we can help a friend. If you look back in your life, probably some of the people you respect the most were the ones that had courage enough to come to you in private and talk with you about something you needed to be told. And they kept it in private, and it probably richly blessed your life. Number 14, when you highly value family, friends, and neighbors. Proverbs 27 and 10, do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend, nor go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor nearby than a brother far away. It's interesting here that the idea is not only a value on your friendships, but it's the idea of the closeness of family. Proverb writer here says, not only value your own friendships, but you value your father's friends. There's an extra respect that God expects us to give to even our parents' friends. And then the last part of that verse is beautiful. It's the idea of, in a time of calamity, you have a brother that lives a far distance away. How much of a benefit is that brother when you need them immediately? And so the praise here is, what about the friend next door? You realize how valuable they are. Last night, as already has been alluded to, just as Jeff was standing up to welcome you, my wife came and sat beside me. You may have noticed that. And she said, Emily, which is our daughter that's a senior in high school at home, said, Emily is real sick at home. She's already thrown up several times. That's all I did. What am I supposed to do? I'm about to get up and preach. Am I supposed to walk out? I didn't know what to do. And she says, is there any way I can leave right now? I understand that motherly instinct. However much a dad can't understand it. And I said, Trace, you realize we're over an hour and a half away from home. She said, I don't guess you can catch a ride. I laughed. I said, no, I don't think so. And she said, well, what are we going to do? She is so sick. I said, Tracy, you have oodles of friends that live within miles of there that will go take care of your daughter for you. Go out back and call one of your friends. And so while we were here worshiping God, she has a wonderful mother and father and two sisters in Little Rock, Arkansas. Why didn't she call them? They would have been glad to come over and help their granddaughter or niece. Well, you know why she didn't call them. They're 6 hours away. That's what this verse is talking about. Better is a neighbor nearby than a brother who's far away in the day of your calamity. Listen, do you realize how blessed you are when you have friends that you can lean on as if they were family? But the problem is, so oftentimes family's not close by. What a blessing it is when we are that friend. When we're the friend that someone can call and say, look, normally I'd only ask family to do this, but they're not available. Can you help me in this situation? Number 15, and then we've got to quickly go to list, but this one's so important. Number 15, when your will reveals wisdom. Proverbs 20 and 21, I know that there's some things that people don't like to tell you how to do it. A lot of people don't like to be told how to spend your money. And so I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to let God tell you, okay? Proverbs 20 and 21, an inheritance gained hastily at the beginning will not be blessed at the end. What is God saying here? Isn't it interesting how the statistics today verify the fact that when children inherit large sums of money at the passing of their parents, usually there is a high percentage of them that does not have anything to show for that large sum of money after 1 to 2 years. Isn't that amazing? It ought to not be amazing to us. It's been written for thousands of years. God said, you take an inheritance that you worked an entire lifetime to build and you dump it on children that have not invested anything. They don't have anything at stake with that inheritance. What's the odds of them dealing wisely with it? God says not very good odds. It's probably not going to happen. Just a few years ago, the numbers were this. There's $4 trillion of wealth in America, in families' wealth, that is expected to be distributed to the next generation just over the next 10 years. I want to encourage you to think about, how is your will written? Is it written in a way to bless your children? Or is it written in a way that God says, you'll probably end up hurting your children? I want to encourage you to think about, are your children godly? How is it if you know your children are not going to do anything profitable for the kingdom or toward godly living, that you would leave everything you've worked for to be used in an ungodly way? Don't say, I'm dead and gone then. I don't have any power over it. Oh, yes, you do. That's why it's called a will. Just like you'll go home this evening and you'll decide if you want to get your checkbook out, and you'll decide if you make a $100 check out, you'll decide if you make a $1,000 check out, you'll decide if you make a $10,000 check out. You know what you do with the will? With a will, you decide how your money is going to be used after you're dead. How's it going to be used? I want to encourage you. I want to encourage you to love the kingdom enough to give to the Lord's work through your will. If you've got godly children, what a blessing that's going to be, because anything they inherit, they're going to give a large percent to the church anyway, because they do that every Sunday. But don't leave your money to someone that's going to run down to Tunica and gamble it away, drink it away, buy big boats to stay out on Sunday and party all weekend. You owe God much more than that. What a responsibility we have. God lays a wonderful, wonderful blessing upon us to say, I want to generously give to you, but then He expects us to generously give back to Him. There are handouts here for the next 16. I'll just read them quickly, the headings, and then you can pick them up. 16, when you are friendly. Number 17, when you're kind. 18, when you choose to live a righteous life. 19, when you are a wise offspring. 20, when you are an excellent wife. 21, when you are a grandchild. 22, when you are merciful. 23, when you control your emotions. 24, when you give gifts. 25, when you stop running with troublemakers. That's an interesting one there. 26, when you are big enough to stop arguments. 27, when you refuse to run with a gossiper. 28, when you don't stoop to the level of a fool. 29, when you don't depend on a fool. 30, when you don't lie about God. 31, when you are honest and work hard. Those are 31 reasons that people would like us. In other words, those are things that we would incorporate in our life. Our life would be a lot better. Now, I know that if all of us were honest with ourselves at this point, we would say, you know, last night's list and this night's list makes life a little bit difficult. It makes it hard. And I want to remind you of a verse you know very well, but I would say some have maybe never noticed this word in this verse. He's already said in Matthew 7 and 13 about wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there's many that go in by it. But notice verse 14. Because narrow is the gate and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it. What was that? Narrow's the gate, but what was the way? The way, Jesus said, is difficult. So if we study things like we have the last two nights and said, wow, Christian living sometimes is challenging, it is difficult, Jesus would say, that's what I said. That's why a lot of folks aren't going to make it. We have to stay on our toes. We have to be alert to the will of God. We have to be compassionate to others. And some, it's not as easy to be compassionate to them. And so tonight we sing a song of encouragement. Where are you spiritually? Are you on that narrow path or are you on that broad path? Are you on a path that is easy or on your path that is difficult? I want to encourage you to love the path that walks with the Lord. And don't worry about how difficult it is. Just commit your ways to it and don't turn your back from Him. Tonight, if you're ready to become a Christian and be baptized into Christ, or maybe you've become a Christian and you've evaluated your life and you need to repent and pray forgiveness, if we can help you in any way, come as we stand, as we sing.